Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I already have up on pwtorch.com. If you guys would like to check out what I thought about the show, even though, hey, that's what we're here to do, talk about what we thought of the show. And with me to do that here tonight would be Mr. Tom Stout. Tom, say hey.
Wait, what? I was reading the hits and misses. Hey, what's up?
Hey.
Really, really straightforward episode tonight, huh?
Yep, we're going to go straightforward, right to the point. You know why? Because, hey, I'm tired, guys. As I was telling Tom right before this, I'm moving in 9 days. I've spent all day packing, and you know what? I don't even have my head completely wrapped around NXT tonight. So, you know, I'd like to move things along so I can get some sleep and actually get back to packing tomorrow. But still, I'd like to talk about NXT while we're here. So let's do just that. Let's talk about the main event, shall we? Our main event tonight was, Braun Breaker versus Roderick Strong, where we did see Braun Breaker go over the current cruiserweight champion. I thought this was actually probably one of Breaker's better matches. He continues to impress me more and more each week, and I'm glad to see. I'm glad to see that happen, honestly, with everything that they've been pushing for him and everything kind of just circling around him with his lineage and all of that. I'm glad to see that he's actually delivering. There aren't a whole lot of talent that I feel like is completely delivering as part of the 2.0 class, some, not others. But Breaker is certainly a standout for me anyway, and I'm glad to see him kind of living up to those expectations. With the potential changes to 205 Live, which we kind of talked about last week, less of that was mentioned tonight, if at all, now that I think about it. But less of that was mentioned tonight. But with that, I've kind of talked a little bit about, you know, me wanting to see Braun Breaker become Cruiserweight champion, whatever the next iteration of that cruiserweight title is. My feeling is they're probably going to wind up rebranding that title, rebranding 205 Live, and making it like an undercard for NXT. I'd love to see Braun Breaker hold that title to be the inaugural champion for that brand, that new show, whatever it winds up being. I feel like that kind of puts some shine on the title, puts some prestige on that title. Because it's certainly lost that, and it's certainly going to lose that in a transition. Any prestige has left in a transition. So that's kind of at least my immediate thoughts. But we did see Tommaso Ciampa come out after the match and attack Braun Breaker. So unfortunately, even though that's what I'd like to see, I don't think that's what we're going to see, because I think what we're going to see is going to be Braun Breaker versus Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT title. Whether or not he wins, when I say he, I mean Braun Breaker, wins the title. I'm still up in the air about it. I feel like Braun Breaker's still a little bit too green, still a little bit too new to the brand to be the face of the brand. But we've seen crazier things. I think it was Bruce last week that pointed out, Braun Breaker's already been in NXT about half as long as Brock Lesnar was before he won his first WWE championship. It's not like unheard of, but I'd certainly like to see Braun Breaker stick like in the company a bit longer before winning his first title. Now that I've flapped my gums, Tom, flap yours.
Yeah, and I think it's much more believable this time around that Breaker could win, although I haven't put my chip on either side of the table yet. I think if the hard question came down, I would say stick with Ciampa. But for similar reasons to you, although I agree it's not unprecedented, and I think Breaker's in a spot now where, I mean, even with that little Waller segment tonight, they very clearly wanted to separate him from Waller's shenanigans. The War Games 2.0 team is all going their separate ways, having gotten their heat there, and now they're branching it into separate storylines rather than still being a collective, and Braun seems to be presented as on television as a locker room leader just from that one segment, because he was speaking on behalf of the locker room standing up to Waller there. Yeah, I mean, I said it was a straightforward episode of television, and this was a very straightforward main event. Roddy may be a champion, and I don't know what they're going to do with that championship, but Roddy's purpose is to give people good matches, and they have been nothing if not extremely careful with whom they put Breaker in the ring with. He is absolutely holding up his ends of matches, but we've seen him with Ciampa and Gargano and Strong and, you know, the best of the best that the brand has to offer. So, like, anybody would be having great matches against these guys. So it was another very good match for Breaker, which is what they want to present right now. So that was a simple success.
All right. So with that, let us go over to the phone lines and kind of let you guys lead the conversation. So we're going to go to area code 814. Go ahead, state your name. Where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, how are you doing tonight?
Good. First question I had was on Wade Barrett. Do you think he'll ever get in the ring? Because he was sort of getting trash-talked by Grayson Waller, and he also talked about being in the gym, so that could be a clue that maybe he's getting in shape for an in-ring return for one match.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. I don't really know what his status is in terms of his physical, if he can physically still go. I don't think he has any physical limitations or anything that I can think of off the top of my head. I wouldn't be opposed to something like that. I feel like Wade Barrett, during his time in WWE, as like Bad News Barrett, Wade Barrett, what have you, I thought he did a great job. I loved him as leader of the Nexus. Thought he did a fantastic job there. So I wouldn't mind seeing him work with some of the younger NXT talent as kind of like a, I hate to put him as a legend, because I don't feel like he's necessarily like he should be considered like a legend unless he signs a legends deal and then I guess he's branded a legend. But whatever. But I wouldn't mind seeing somebody that older, some tenure, and has some history within WWE. Kind of stepping away from the announce desk and giving a rub to somebody like that. What do you think about that, Tom?
Trying to scan through my memory and try to recall if he wrestled after WWE. Obviously, he made appearances, but I can't recall any that were actually wrestling appearances. And it's possible he took bumps.
He worked for the. Actually, no, wait a minute. Yeah, I know he did a couple things for Defiant Wrestling.
One that's coming to mind. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't remember if he actually wrestled, if it was just appearances. I know he did that. And then I know he did, he was an announcer. Yeah. For NWA. But that's a good point. That's a good point.
So I am not aware of any physical reason why he would not do it other than, well, now, quick. 41. Well, he's only 41 and he still looks good. And if Ryan says he's back in the gym, I missed that. I don't know if he said it as part of the broadcast tonight. And if he did, I would say he's just saying that to get something over. But yeah, I think I would be in favor of that. Doing something kind of like what William Regal did when he took on Cassius Ohno, when he took on Cesaro in the early days of Full Sail NXT. I don't think that would be out of the question at all to put over someone like Waller and add heat to this tear that Waller is primed to go on. At the same time, I also am not at a point yet where I'm anticipating it just based on what I've seen. And again, maybe there's something that Ryan has heard that I haven't. But nothing that happened tonight, even with his name, the way Waller addressed him, nothing made me think that might be forthcoming. It just seemed like Waller, doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on the heat from last week.
That was kind of the way I took it too. He ran down everybody, the crowd, Barrett, Vic Joseph. I don't know, I could picture his face clear as day. I couldn't think of his name. But he ran down everybody. you know, LA Knight, and that was the way I took it. It was just, he was just trying to build heat, gain heat, and kind of just, you know, go from there. But I would certainly be in the camp of seeing something like that, seeing Wade Barrett come and try to get a little bit of revenge on Grayson Waller, give him the rub there. I was always a huge fan. Like, anytime I was watching Raw, you know, as a kid during the Attitude Era, like anytime Jerry Lawler got off the announce desk, you know, I loved Jerry and JR. So it was really cool for me just to see Jerry get up and then have a match and then get back and sit back down at ringside. So I'd be absolutely down with something like that. Ryan, what
it's
else
such
you got
a
for
cool
us?
Spot, ooh. Right? Cause like you almost don't expect it. And especially with someone like Lawler, or in this case, you know, Regal, or I think it would work here with Barrett. You're not expecting it. And when it happens, it's a novelty and you get to see this person in the ring again. But I mean, when has that not worked, except for maybe in the silliness of like Booker T
Michael
and JBL
Cole,
and I think even Michael Cole getting into the Rumble, but like even what were they calling him at the time? Something Madden. But when Brennan
Dio
Williams
Madden.
Now, yeah, Dio Madden. Even when he stood up to Brock, I was like, hell yeah, this is fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah. So and then it ended up being his write off. I think I was on the post show that night with Wade, and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be good. We're finally going to get the debut of Brennan Williams. It seems like they see a lot in this guy. Welp.
Yeah. No, and actually, I think you were on the post show. I think I actually remember listening to that, and because I thought the exact same thing. I thought Dio Madden was actually going to be like the next person to face Brock Lesnar or something. Like, I thought they were building a cool story, and they just never went anywhere with it. But that's WWE. Ryan, what else you got for us tonight?
My other question was on Ivy Niles. I know she lost a bunch of matches, like on house shows under her name Emily. But do you think we'll get the rub to beat her on TV since she hasn't lost since Battle Royal when she debuted? Because I think that'd be a pretty big rub for someone because she's been pretty dominant in her matches in the last month or so.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like she, especially where she is the sole female member of Diamond Mine, and Diamond Mine's being, you know, really being positioned as a force to be reckoned with, if you will. Even though they're being positioned that way, but that's at least not the way I'm taking them. Regardless, still, I agree. I think anybody that winds up beating her will get a little bit of a rub. I want to see her have some more meaningful matches, I guess, before I really kind of pass judgment. So far, I like what I've seen. I think it was her first match, and I forget who the opponent was, but in the back of my head, I remember saying that, like, I saw some greenness or something out of her. I don't remember specifics off the top of my head, but I didn't really feel like that tonight. I feel like she was very explosive and bombastic, It came across really, really well. Especially Amari Miller too tonight. She actually got a little bit more offense than I was expecting. She got an entrance for that matter. The announcers were talking her up a little bit. So I'm kind of cool with that too, because like I would like to see them build some more female talent. We've talked about it quite a bit in the past. Where like this was the greatest women's division in wrestling 2 years ago, and it's not there anymore. And that's okay. They can get back there if they want. But you know, building stars and building talent, is certainly what they're here to do. And Amari Miller, I like the fact that they gave her a little bit of a spotlight tonight. They gave her some offense in that match. But still, Ivy Nile came out on top. She looked strong, and she still, she still has that undefeated streak, at least on TV anyway. I don't know who's going to be the person to, you know, dethrone her, and unseat her from that undefeated streak, but nor do I actually see her in the NXT title picture anytime soon, because I feel like that would, or NXT women's title picture, because I feel like that would detract her from the Diamond Mine story, but they could still, I guess, kind of, weave that in there. But yeah, I feel like she's certainly going to be a player in the women's division, at least in the short term. Tom.
Valentina Feroz was the person to give Ivy Nile her first win on TV. And I agree that Amari Miller has been doing a nice job as enhancement talent. I think when it's clear that the other person is going to win, if Amari Miller is on the other side of the ring, you know that it's probably going to be a good few minutes getting there. And I guess I don't know what the time on this match was, but it felt like a few minutes. And because it wasn't like what we got out of Harland, which is fully what I expected we were going to get out of Harland, just a straight up beatdown. I think that Ivy Nile's matches have been relatively lengthy enough, relatively, and shown enough back and forth. And not and very importantly, not just the same thing over and over again. Each match has shown us something new from her, multiple new things from her, that I am optimistic that she would be able to hang just fine in a longer women's title context sort of match. So I tonight in particular, just because of the consistency, I was feeling that more than ever with her. Just like, okay, I think this is someone that we're going to be talking about in the title picture, at least at some point over the next year. At some point in 2022, she might be adjacent to it. It feels like the kind of person that they won't be able to keep away from it for that long, unless she disappears from the brand for one reason or another. One would hope getting promoted. But yes, just very, very impressed. I loved my favorite part of the match tonight. I loved that little like bounce off the bottom rope thing she did too. But I loved when Amari had her in a head scissors and she was just shaking her head. It wasn't like a total no sell, like, okay, this is having no effect on me, but it was just sort of like a grimace and then shaking her head like, yep, nope, not good enough, girl. So I really like the those little character moments that she's adding into. Yes, quite hopeful for the early career of Ivy Nile here.
All right, and Ryan, do you have anything else for us tonight?
That was all my questions. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thank you very much, Ryan. Appreciate you calling in. Hope to hear from you soon.
Likewise.
Thank you.
All right, and with that, let's go ahead. Tom, go ahead and pick a match to start talking about while I bring up the mailbag that I forgot to bring up until literally just a second.
Oh, yeah, I think it's pretty full, with the exception of the one that we kept on red for Kelly. I guess we'll keep it on red another week. You know what? I think the prime story tonight, as opposed to a match, is just the through lines with Waller. And I know we already touched on it, but this dude just – he went out there and he cut a hell of a promo to, like I said, double and triple down on last week's heat. And, you know, I think – some of the performative criticism that we see, which, you know, I'm not trying to cast a blanket. I know there's some real legit criticism, and that's fine. But some of the criticism that seems like it's just trying to get clicks, trying to get likes, are people saying like, oh, well, who even is this Waller guy? Well, of course, that's the point. Now you know who he is, and especially after this week, you know who Grayson Waller is. And I think he really, the signal was there absolutely. Like, okay, this is one of the top guys on the brand now. He's not just the one in the mix of the new guys who did the cool spot off the top of the cage. And, you know, and Johnny did some favors for him afterward. This cemented like, okay, keep your eyes on him. Or even if you aren't keeping your eyes on him, we're going to make sure that he's in your purview. Waller is absolutely the major story tonight.
100%. And, you know, he is certainly not somebody that I thought was going to be like a breakout talent from this 2.0 class, if you will. You know, when we were talking about him after Halloween Havoc, you know, he did that spot with LA Knight. They were both vampires, and yeah, it just kind of seemed like, meh, whatever, it was here. Okay, that's cool. I really kind of thought that might have been his ceiling. I thought that, you know, he might be kind of just dancing around, you know, the upper mid card, maybe toiling up with the main event, especially with War Games. But then he you know, gets the pin at War Games, and then he attacks Gargano, and then he cuts this promo tonight that was just, I thought it was probably one of the best things I've seen on NXT TV in recent memory. It was a fantastic promo, and it was completely unexpected for me. I didn't see that type of mic ability out of him while he was a face. And tonight I felt like everything that he delivered was incredibly authentic. And it felt like he was really speaking from his evil heart, if you will. I dug it 100%. I did not think he was going to be the standout, and he really took me by surprise. Absolutely took me by surprise.
It was definitely, and you know, my eyes are wide open, glued to the screen. You can feel in your chest, like, okay, something, an important chapter of development is happening right now. As opposed to usually, like, sort of the passive way that we'll watch the show, because it, you know, as it persists, and for as much as we may compliment or criticize it, the show just sort of exists week to week. And then something like this happens, and you're like, ooh, you really got my attention on this one.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, and this kind of goes back to something that, you know, we were talking about a bit ago when Ryan called in with Wade Barrett. When Grayson Waller turned to Wade Barrett and Vic Joseph, but primarily Barrett, like, I actually got goosebumps, because you don't – not only do you not normally see the NXT talent bring the announcers in like that, you do from time to time, but not often. But he did it in just such a, I guess the best way I can describe, just such an authentic way, where I was like, I just kind of got goosebumps. He felt like he had a presence. And yeah, you're absolutely right. There was some gravitas to that segment that just didn't feel like, you know, week to week TV. It felt like, okay, this is important. We need to pay attention to this. And it absolutely, absolutely grabbed my attention. So
honestly, it should have opened the show. It really should have. I know that so many people just want the shows to open with matches, but this should have opened the show. What did Kelly say about it? Good heel promo work by Waller, who's running hard with the ball after last week's big feature spot. Okay, I thought Kelly would be a little more excited about it than that, but at least he agreed.
Is that what he wrote in his live report?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Maybe he is a little bit more excited about it. I know he had other things to do tonight, which is why he's not here with us tonight. So he was kind of like writing that, you know, a little fast, but yeah, we'll see. Cause like I thought it was one of the best things I've seen on NXT TV in recent memory. And that's even before 2.0. It was a really fantastic promo. So with that, let us go over to the mailbag. We're going to do things again a little bit differently tonight than we normally do. We're going to hit the mailbag, kind of hit some of the talking points that you guys bring up in the mailbag, and then anything else that we kind of feel like talking about, comes to mind or anything like that. But we may not necessarily hit every single point on the show, may not hit every single segment on the show. But you know what? That means we don't go, you know, 2 hours and 12 minutes like we did last week. So, hey, I'm cool with that. Let's dive into the mailbag. We're going to start up with a follow-up from last week where we kind of got on our AEW tangent there towards the end of the episode. So this is a follow-up from Heat and Dave. Hi, Tom. Just wanted to follow up by saying that in my previous email, when I mentioned strawmanning, I didn't specifically mean you. While I do have a lot of problems with some of your thresholds for both companies, I was instead referring to the AEW and WWE diehards who seem to define their very existence by their hatred for the other promotion and bend over backwards for their home team. In any case, I don't want to relitigate on an AEW debate on an NXT show. What I instead want to say is that I think your voice is necessary. Even if I don't agree, I think the wrestling world would be better off if we got to have you on some AEW post shows, as well as a co-host from time to time, like Kelly Wells. Same goes for Nate Lindberg. One of the reasons I gravitate towards the Torch is that this site has been one of the most constructively critical of AEW, and that is something that a new company sorely needs. In addition, I don't get the sense that you are a grifter or a gimmick like Jim Cornette. you're not monetized for your opinion, and I don't think that you just hop on the AEW hate train that WWE diehards start up. So I think it would be really great to hear more of your perspective on the product in the appropriate show. It would also give me a chance to dig into your opinions more without needing to write a guest editorial to NXT shows. I understand you are busy men with families and other obligations, but sometimes watching a product that really irks you can be bad for mental health, one of the reasons I'm slowly withdrawing from WWE. But it would really make me happy to hear what Tom and Nate on an AEW post show, if you could make it work. Your voices matter. Just a hopeful request. Best, Keaton Dave. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to that myself. I wouldn't be opposed to that myself. I think I want to definitely wait about a month or so for me to get myself moved and the holidays to die down a little bit before I do that. But I wouldn't be opposed to something like that. You know, get on either an AEW post show with Wade, or heck, even if Tom and I were to do like a one-off AEW post show special, the two of us watch an episode or something like that, or Kelly with us too, or whatever. I think it'd be kind of cool. It'd be different because something different to provide analysis for. But you guys would obviously get a bit of a different perspective than the traditional analysts for AEW here on the Torch, Tom. What do you think about all that in a can of worms?
Well, let me tell you something. No, I appreciate the follow-up. I appreciated the initial email from Patane and from JB. Really good perspective led to really good conversation, I feel. And I know you do as well, Nate. We could have gone even longer about it and hit a lot more points. But I think we covered – I feel we covered enough ground that a weight has been lifted over the past week. I had previously said, okay, I think I'm done touching on this. I think I've jabbed at it enough. But actually sinking our teeth in a bit more last week allowed me to lift the weight of like, okay, I don't comment on AEW. It's also kind of not fair for me to, not just because of the perception of being on the other team because I cover an NXT show, but also because I'm, consciously avoiding watching it and only listening to audio recaps. Finally having a venue to where he was invited, like, okay, go ahead and talk about this for 20 minutes. The weight has been lifted. And I think I also very much appreciate what Hitane included about the mental health thing, because I think I might just have to go ahead and cut out the AEW recaps as well. And like, if something important happens and I miss it, oh, well. If it affects my analysis on here, because I don't know that like somebody did something over there that is commented on and everybody goes, ooh, and I don't get the reference. Oh, well, because it just makes me a much less happy person listening to, all the analysis and everything about a brand that I just deeply revile for all the reasons and more that we discussed. And it doesn't seem to be. Well, whatever. Again, we're not relitigating. But anyway, just that's my very wordy way of saying thank you for the emails. And I think it was a good conversation. I feel it was a good conversation. And I'm glad I don't come off like a I'm trying to be monetized or anything. I actually did get an offer to monetize an AEW hate podcast, and I turned it down. So, I guess that's the kind of thing I shouldn't say. I should just keep it to myself but there you go.
All right. Now Hitane, I first apologize for always butchering your name. And second, I want to say thanks for the emails. Definitely appreciate the conversation. So we're now going to go to an email from Paul Robinson, which is titled Serial Killers. Hey guys. Who do you think is the big serial killer fan in the NXT office? We had Dexter Lumis a while back, a blatant nod to a fictional one, coupled with a horror film good guy, but then nothing. Since 2.0, we've had Joe Gacy, the killer clown John Wayne Gacy, Tony D'Angelo, GSK Joseph D'Angelo, Andre Chase, vampire Richard Chase, and Von Wagner, Snowtown's Robert Wagner. Is it all a coincidence or just someone upset that King Kong Bundy isn't in the Hall of Fame? Keep up the good work, Paul in Staffordshire. So Joe Gacy, that one I got, John Wayne Gacy. And Dexter Lumis, that one I got too. Tony D'Angelo, I just kind of assumed they were, you know, just picked like a an Italian name. Like I said, Tommy Angelo was the main character in the Mafia game. Tommy Angelo, not Tony D'Angelo, but, you know. So I just kind of felt like they picked a random Italian name for that. But I also don't know who Joseph D'Angelo is. I'm not a huge, like, true crime guy. I'm not sure who Richard Chase is, and I'm not sure who Robert Wagner are either. I'm assuming they're all, like, serial killers and stuff. If I had to guess who the serial killer fan is, I don't know. I'm going to say Bruce Pritchard, but I don't think it's that. I don't think it's Bruce Pritchard, especially since, like, well, was Loomis, was Sam Shaw doing like a Loomis-esque act before he got to NXT?
I think esque. I don't think it was I believe. I'm not certain, but I believe he was.
I believe he was, but I'm not 100% sure myself. I don't really know. I know, it's a guilty pleasure. I really like Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson. I'm not a huge fan of Bruce Pritchard, but I like just hearing a lot of those stories, like the older stories and stuff. I take them with a grain of salt, but I find it entertaining and entertainment. And I know I've heard him talk about serial killers in the past. So I don't know, maybe, you know, Joe Gacy, I mean, he used the name on the indies. But yeah, as far as like Tony D'Angelo, Andre Chase, and Von Wagner, I don't know. That's a good question. That is a good question. I don't know what the answer is to that.
I'm gonna say it's Jeremy Borash just to razz him. I think, you know, Gacy, and you pointed out that the name existed beforehand. Gacy and Escobar, you know, different, not serial killer per se, but responsible for millions of deaths. Those are the ones that bug me. I think the other ones, there have just been so many famous serial killers to this point in history that, you know, you're just going to have the crossover. But this is a bad example because isn't it his real name? But like, why wouldn't it be his real name? Who would name themselves Bobby Fish? But like Bobby Fish, it's not a reference to Albert Fish. That's just the one that comes to mind. Even though, again, bad example because shoot name. But yeah, I don't think there's anything more there other than just, I think it's inadvisable to, I don't know. It gives me the willies that they just think, okay, sure, we'll just let him use the name Gacy and let it evoke what it evokes. That's not the kind of effectiveness that I think you should be going for. Same with Escobar. I think those names need to be changed.
I 100% agree. I am not in the camp of glorifying horrible people. I understand the fascination with true crime and just trying to understand like what goes through these people's heads, like when they do these horrific things and stuff like that. Like I can understand the fascination by it, but like glorifying it and, I just like using the name Gacy, using the name Escobar, I wouldn't be comfortable using a name like that and kind of standing for what that name invokes and things like that. So I'm in the camp of the names need to be changed. But
absolutely. Like we don't personally know the victims in these cases, but I think the example I'll go to is like, what if a wrestler named themselves something that was evocative of Mark David Chapman? Like, wouldn't we all hate the fact that this dude was trying to get heat from the naming himself after the John Lennon's murderer? I could go off on that, but hopefully that example lands.
No, 100%. So, with Gacy, even though it's weird. I'm torn on Gacy. Cause like, there's that side of me that like I just said, I don't like the glorifying and all of that, but it also works. That name also kind of helps to make his character feel just a little bit a little bit creepy, a little creepier. And I feel like I personally am enjoying the Gacy act, and it's growing on me. But I think he could still achieve the exact same thing with a different name. And we wouldn't have to like be glorifying some guy that, you know, dressed up like a clown and then cut people up and put them in his crawl space under his house. Yeah, because, you know, that's not messed up or anything. All right. So let's go to another email here from Sean. Evening, gentlemen. Not a lot to say tonight, so I will get right to it. I liked everything Grayson Waller did tonight. Do y'all think NXT is going to strap a rocket to him and put a title on him as soon as they seem to really be pushing him? Yes, I think they probably will. The next thing, did y'all notice that Vic Joseph said hospital and not local medical facility? You know, I didn't, but that's interesting. I did not notice he said hospital when he was doing the injury report on the three people that got injured tonight. I also didn't notice and this is me talking, not Sean. I also didn't notice in the moment anyway, when Harlan threw the dude down the stairs, I did not realize that was Brian Kendrick until Vic Joseph said it was Brian Kendrick in the report. I remember looking at the guy and going, hey, he looks familiar, but it didn't like click to me that was Kendrick. One more question. Who's going to win the Gonzalez-Kai match next week? I think it should be Raquel, as she has unfinished business with Mandy. Have Dakota go away and finally have her go up to the main roster by debuting in the Royal Rumble. I can't stress that enough. Now, on to the news of the night. Not only did my Dubs, Golden State Warriors, win tonight, but my boy Curry now holds the record for the most three-pointers of all time. Yay, sports ball. That's me, not Sean. Y'all have an awesome night, and thanks as always for everything you provide. Sean, I'm glad they won for you. I'm not a sports guy, but you know what? I'm just glad you're happy, man. I'm just glad you're happy. So I'm down with what you're saying about Gonzalez and Kai. I would like to see Raquel go over as well, where she has unfinished business with Mandy. There's also part of me, I just want to see Dakota Kai win too. But I think it's for the story. I think it probably will be Raquel Gonzalez, you know, and then because she does have that unfinished business with Mandy. One thing I will point out about Gonzalez while we're here is, man, she does not know how to play mean, at least in a promo while she's by herself in a backstage segment. There was a segment where she basically just, it was after her and Dakota Kai were brawling in the parking lot, where she was just staring at the camera and kind of tried to like look mean and was trying to snarl and stuff. And all I could think of, and this isn't going to make sense to any of you guys because, well, you don't know my mom, but all I could think of was my mom trying to act mean, which would be hilarious. She just came off as like trying to act. It did not come off as genuine anger at all. Like I kind of just was like cringing that entire promo. I felt like that before with her while she was champion as well. But like that one in particular, I thought was just really bad. But as far as the last point that he made, Dakota Kai going up to the main roster in the Rumble, yes, please. Because just like Kelly, Royal Rumble is my favorite match of the year as well. And I'd love to see Dakota Kai debut in the Rumble and hopefully have some sort of a meaningful impact in the women's division on the main roster and not, you know, just kind of toil and flounder away as a lot of our beloved call-ups do. Tom, on the email.
In high school, I was in a skit with another student, and the idea was that we were spouses and we were quarreling over something. The main thing I remember about it is that from off stage, she had to throw a shoe at me, but miss, and she actually hit me, and she broke character because she was so worried that it hurt. But
who throws a shoe?
Oh boy, I think this was early enough that that movie hadn't come out yet, but. Because otherwise I would have totally associated it. You're right. But yes. It, wait, no. It that movie was out. Had I somehow not seen it yet? That's impossible. Anyway,
I think we've had this conversation on the show before. I think it was 1997 now, if memory serves.
Yes, we absolutely have. But I was uncomfortable, like, acting angry with her on stage. I didn't know how to deliver it convincingly. And she finally got to a point with me where she was just like, okay, I can't teach you how to do this. So just, like, yell your lines. Just raise the volume of your voice to yell your lines. And that's what I did. And it sounded awful. It sounded totally artificial. But it's the best way I could pull it off. And that is what I thought of when Raquel was cutting that promo in the locker room tonight. It was just as bad as you said it was. But I feel like this should be the feud blow off. So I feel like Raquel should win. I'm not going to be happy unless Dakota goes back in a trash can for a third time. It's kind of become her thing, and then repeatedly sharing embarrassing photos of herself in a trash can on social media. I just, you know, of all the good things about Dakota Kai, that might be my favorite. So Coda's got to go back in the can. But because it's a street fight, and Dakota's been really good in street fights before, so that's, you know, a good reason why it should be a street fight. But that also invites shenanigans to get involved in the match without the match getting thrown out. So even though it should be the blow-off, I could also totally envision Dakota winning in as unclean a way as you can put in a street fight context. That said, and this is like, you know, I'm wishy-washy all over the board with this, that said, Dakota losing is what Dakota does. You know, there was no chance she was going to win tonight against Cora Jade. I really would have liked to see Cora get a more definitive win. You can still do the shovel distraction with the official, but then let Cora hit whatever the heck her finisher is. I don't even know what it is. Let her get that on screen rather than just doing a roll-up, which is similar to how she won in War Games. So I would have liked to see them do more with that. But Dakota losing, it's just what Dakota does. So, I think there are multiple ways that we can get out of this one. I'd like to see Coda in the Rumble for sure. I guess it just seems like she got a look from the main roster and it didn't pan out. You know, she was doing the tryout matches and they didn't take her. But they didn't fire her either. So she's back in NXT, unless for some reason they said, which this is so not a main roster thing to do. If they see the new toy, they want to play with it right away, or at least start promoting it. Like, how long have we been seeing the Veer Mahan videos? It's like 3 months now, it feels like. It's not quite that long, but it feels like that long. I doubt that they saw Dakota in the tryouts and they were like, all right, let's use her. But not yet. She doesn't factor in yet. So go down and wrestle in NXT for a little bit and maybe get injured and we won't be able to enact the plan. That just doesn't seem like how they would do it. So I'm not going to predict that. For Waller, yes, absolutely. I think that a title could be in his future after what he did tonight. I get the impression that it doesn't change how I'm feeling about Ciampa versus Breaker. I think that the juice is absolutely more there if Ciampa retains the title and he comes out to defend Gargano's honor. And that would be a lot more dramatic if Waller is just like going on yet again about how he took out the heart and soul of NXT or whatever he called himself. And Ciampa comes out to defend his DIY brother. But they did plant the face breaker, the baby face breaker versus heel Waller seed tonight as well. So you could go either way. But yes, absolutely. You know, do y'all think NXT is going to strap a rocket to Grayson Waller? That rocket's been strapped, and I think it's absolutely top level.
Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more here. All right, so let's go down to JB. JB says, hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. For me, one of the last reasons I continue to tune into NXT is because of LA Knight. I'm not making a direct comparison to guys like Stone Cold and The Rock, but to me, he gives off a vibe in his presentation and his promos that his rebel persona is bigger than the brand and he doesn't have to answer to the front office officials. He is the star that they would answer to, much like Dwayne and Steve did. He's one of the last few things that feels real and natural to me on the brand. Also, I kind of hope the crowds evolve from the consistent dog barking chants during Bron Breakker's matches. Not that I have anything against Corbin, Nate. I actually think the kid has a lot of potential, but I'd like to think that if he continues to improve, he won't be stuck in the gimmick his dad and uncle used so many years back. One of the things that still annoys me about Charlotte Flair appearances is the constant wooing. I'm not even blaming Braun or Charlotte. I just hope that the crowd engagement can improve. Love the show and go VIP. I wouldn't necessarily make a direct comparison for LA Knight to like The Rock and Stone Cold either, but I've said it on this show before, and I've also said it to people when I've every once in a while, a few of my friends, you know, kind of casual wrestling fans will be like, hey, what's going on in NXT? And if I bring up LA Knight, I call him The Rock Light. And I mean that in the absolute best way possible. It's the best compliment that I can possibly give him, because when he talks, he reminds me exactly of The Rock, like in like The Rock's prime. Even if he was to come back today and give a promo, I mean, we would still give a similar vibe. He does not feel scripted. He feels extremely authentic, probably the most authentic promo on the brand, maybe in the company. That isn't somebody that's, you know, like a John Cena or, you know, like a Roman or somebody that has the ability to like kind of go off on their own a little bit. Doesn't have to like, you know, read a script or something like that. I feel like he's incredibly authentic and he does feel like a star. I don't think he, at least in my head, he hasn't quite hit that he's bigger than the brand yet, but I certainly see where you're coming from, JB, and I don't think you're that far off. I could certainly see, given his, like where he is and his persona. I mean, he's not the greatest in the ring. He reminds me of somebody like The Miz in the ring, but that's still not a bad thing. He's going to go out. He gives you a great match every time. He's going to go out and give you consistency night after night, and he's going to entertain the absolute hell out of the crowd with his mic work. I would love to see, him just kind of get like strapped to the moon. Whether it be in NXT or if he does go up to the main roster, I hope he does go up to the main roster sooner rather than later. Not that I want to see LA Knight leave NXT, but we've been saying it since LA Knight debuted, that gimmick is tailor-made for the main roster. And that gimmick is also something that if Vince doesn't know what to do with, I might just give up at this point, because I feel like that gimmick is completely tailor-made for Vince McMahon's WWE sandbox. Tom.
I do agree regarding Braun. You've got Charlotte still, you know, it's always haunted her that she's compared to her dad, and yet she invites those comparisons with things like the wooing. And of course, WWE didn't help her much by always having Rick by her side for so long. I agree with JB about Breakker's potential to improve beyond just being a mini Steiner. And regarding LA Knight, I agree with absolutely everything you said, Nate, wholeheartedly. Just regarding tonight specifically, and maybe I'm just honing in too much on one word, but I've just always hated the word butthurt. It seems not just prude, but also even homophobic to me. So I don't like that word. And it's like, you know, you're a babyface, and I'm totally fine with you calling people incels. I think that's hilarious, but maybe don't use the word butthurt. It seems I felt like that word was dated by the time people started using it. So love ya, La Knight, but not that one.
You know, I got to admit, I the term butthurt didn't quite dawn on me until 30 seconds ago. Naive Nate. So let's go back to the mailbag here. Kevin Kevin Catani writes in and says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Despite him being fodder for Harland, it was great to see Brian Kendrick again. I was actually just talking to him about a buddy, and voila, there he is in the flesh. Fast forwarding to the main event, I thought Roddy worked a great match with Braun and definitely held his own. Malcolm Bivens' facial reactions were great, too. I'm also loving the continued program with Ciampa. That said, how long do you think this feud plays out? Can they take it to Mania weekend, or will the rubber match happen well before then? With the addition of Hayes to the match extracurricular tonight, do they stretch the program out by giving Braun the North America title for a spell, maybe make him the second ever two-belt champ, or is that too soon for that kind of elevation? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8 years back. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin Catani, PhD. You know, I completely forgot that we already had a two-belt champ. The visions of Keith Lee holding up the North American title and NXT title just what, like a little over a year ago about, give or take, have completely been just erased from my brain. That was such a feel-good moment, too. Such a feel-good moment. I don't know. I mean, I guess they could play this out until Mania weekend. It would depend on how they go about things. Bringing Trick Williams and Hayes in and kind of doing a bit of a sub feud with Bron Breakker would certainly work for me. I'd be okay with that, especially where, if you've noticed, all of the male champions right now, singles champions, the Cruiserweight champion, NXT champion, and North American champion, they're all calling themselves the champion. They're all calling, like, you had Carmelo Hayes calling himself the A champion. Ciampa is the A champion, holding the top belt on the brand. And then you've got Malcolm Bivens and Roderick Strong claiming that Roderick Strong is the champion on the brand. So I feel like there's something there. There's a reason that all three of those men are laying claim to being the champion in NXT. Cause usually you don't talk up a secondary title like that. You know, some individual may or whatever, but you don't normally hear that across like multiple titles like that. So I feel like they're building up something. And this email, this idea with like making Bron Breakker two belt champ, maybe that could be what they're working to, kind of like that kind of sparked a thought in my head anyway. That could be what they're working to. But I'm not sure. I don't know if I'd want to see him be Bron Breakker, be a North American and NXT champion at the same time yet. Maybe I guess like a few months down the road. But I feel like stopping off at the North American title first, or even the Cruiserweight title / whatever that title becomes, you know, in the months to come. I think that is where he should be first, and then get propelled up to, you know, to the NXT title. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think he's probably going to get propelled right to the NXT title. He'll win and whatever. That's kind of what I'm thinking anyway. Whether or not it gets stretched out to Mania weekend or not is obviously, you know, we'll see what happens. I think it's a possibility, to be honest. With the pacing of NXT 2.0, especially now where they don't seem to be doing bigger specials as often, as often as they were with like NXT 2.0 or NXT rather, when they were going up head to head with AEW. They're not necessarily building to as many big shows, so they could certainly do something like that, kind of stretch this out with some sub feuds and whatnot, to get it out, you know, to the March, April timeframe. Tom.
So some of this does depend on how long for NXT Breakker is, because as we said, even though he's been put up against the best of the best opponents, he is very much holding his own and absolutely would, you know, keep his head well above water in the climate that is the main roster. And a lot of people have already been speculating. I believe it was Zach Hadorn recently in an opinion piece saying that Bron Breakker is the person to eventually take the title off of Roman Reigns. So that conversation is out there and it is believable. So I think that would be
one of the only reasons why Breaker wouldn't succeed in an NXT championship realm. And success not necessarily being defined by claiming the title, but I don't foresee them. I'm not entirely opposed to your 205 Live idea, depending on how they present it, but I think any other title than the NXT Championship would feel like a demotion, or feel like maybe they were backpedaling a bit after the just super strong presentation that they've given to the guy so far, and with how he's lived up to it. So then as far as where things go, as far as stretching the program out to WrestleMania. Oh, and the two belt thing. I don't think the land is laid for that right now with Hayes as the North American champion, even with Hayes, doing the whole A champion bit. I just don't feel like the challengers are right for that right now. Although if I slept on that more, I might have a different answer. But as far as stretching things out to WrestleMania, I think, we saw the reports that we saw on Gargano almost immediately after we signed off of our podcast last week, after Nate, you and I were like, oh yeah, okay, this guy's sticking around. He's going to take a break for a while, but he's totally coming back to blow this off with Waller at the very least. And then Bruce was the one who was like, I don't know. And then as soon as we sign off, we start seeing all these reports about how he's, you know, absolutely done. I still wasn't sure if I could believe it. And even to, you know, opening this week by showing him on screen again, showing, you know, all the highlights. It was a drawn out video package at the top of the show. Bringing up his name a lot. I felt like, okay, they're putting this out there visually again because he's coming back. Right. And then I guess tonight he started a Twitch channel. So there's that. So I think, although this could easily change, whether it's with Gargano coming back in some form or just in any other way that it could change, I think right now I would put money on the Mania weekend match or the Mania week match, however they do it, being a triple threat between Ciampa, Breaker, and Waller. It's really hard for me to envision Waller not getting involved in that scene by that time. It just seems like the pieces are in the right places and the drama is high to pull that trigger. Honestly, I would say, like, this seems early and it seems knee-jerk, but I think Waller for champion. I mean, the heat that he had tonight is not dissimilar. I'm not trying to put him in that echelon, not by any means, not that quickly, but the heat he had tonight was not dissimilar to the heat Ciampa had when he was attacking Gargano and turning on Gargano, and it propelled him to the championship. So I think there would be a lot of interest in putting that belt on Waller instead of Breaker. Or do they do a Keith Lee thing and only give him a short title run? There are so many options that totally work for me in theory. They're in a really good – the broth is good right now, this scene. And then the only other thing on the email is that, like you, Nate, I did not recognize Brian Kendrick until they said that it was him. Even when the other officials were saying his name in that scene, I thought they were saying Bryce or Ryan. I couldn't quite make it out. So I didn't put Bryce and Ryan together to make Brian, and he was grimacing just enough in the pain that I, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I get nice to see him because it's like, I every once in a while I would think about it. Like he is still under contract, right? What is he doing? And I guess I just hadn't heard that he was coaching, but that totally makes sense for him.
Yeah. I remember now hearing that he was coaching and stuff, because he hasn't been on TV in, like, wow, years, I feel like, at this point. But I do remember hearing that, but it was, like, tucked away in the back of my head. And, like when they were screaming the name, I thought they were saying Ryan, and they were just, you know, whatever. And even, like I said, like his face, like Brian Kendrick's face, like looked familiar, but I didn't put two and two together that you know, Ryan was Brian and this guy that looked vaguely familiar was actually the Brian Kendrick.
And his face was contorted in pain, and we were looking at it upside down at an angle. So, you know, disadvantage.
Yeah, you know. So, okay, so with that, that was the end of the mailbag there. So, let's see, what other matches have we not talked about tonight? So, we actually really haven't talked about many of them. So I guess
it was such a straightforward show.
It really was. So, real quick, we had Duke Hudson versus Cameron Grimes. We had Amari Miller versus Ivy Nile. We had Harland versus Guru Raj. Dakota Kai versus Cora Jade. Tony D'Angelo versus Andre Chase, Idris Nofe versus Boa, and Jacket Time versus Grizzled Young Vets. Obviously, we also had our main event, which we also talked about tonight. So I don't know if you've got anything in particular you want to mention about any of those matches. I guess real quick, I want to bring up, you know, Hudson versus Grimes. I feel like they are making chicken salad out of chicken shit, to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of the story. I'm not a huge fan of like all the poker stuff that they were doing. And I know if memory serves, I think you enjoyed it and Kelly enjoyed like the poker in-ring poker segment. I didn't watching poker on TV just isn't fun for me. And I don't know.
Think we ever found out what Kelly thought of that. I know, Blake Riley also did not like that. I did enjoy the poker segment, but yeah, it was widely
unpopular. It was polarizing. Like I said, I really didn't like it. Like, I'm not the type of person who's going to sit down and watch poker on TV. And I might have even said it on that particular podcast, but like my roommate, you know, we all play Magic the Gathering. All my friends, we all play Magic the Gathering. My roommate, I'll like look over and see him like just watching people play Magic, like just live streaming Magic or something. And I can't do it. Can't do that. It just, even if it's a game that I really enjoy, like Magic, I just can't watch somebody play cards. So, you know, that said, I feel like they're making chicken salad out of chicken shit. The angle I haven't gotten behind. Matter of fact, I've even said like they lost me on Cameron Grimes. Like, there's a couple times through this feud where I just wanted to get Cameron Grimes and Duke Hudson off my screen. So I wanted to move on to the next thing. Tonight, I really enjoyed their street fight. I mean, it wasn't anything special. You know, no major craziness in the street fight. The only big difference was the obligatory table spot was a poker table, not just a regular table. But yeah, I still think it was fun, and I enjoyed it. The other match that I wanted to point out, or one of the other matches I want to point out was Harland versus Guru Raj. We haven't seen Guru Raj, at least that I remember, under this particular name. So I don't actually know who he was or if we've seen anything, seen him in anything else before, but, I really dug Harland here. Really just like, I was almost kind of getting like Luke Harper or, you know, Rowan vibes out of him. I mean, the whole act with Gacy and everything, like I've made comparisons to Wyatt Family, other people have made comparisons to Wyatt Family, and I really got that tonight. What stood out to me too, and it's obviously not the first time that Gacy's used that music, that almost like Nirvana-esque music. But for some reason tonight, with Harland coming out, at the forefront and with him in the background, Gacy in the background, it really did almost feel like an older Wyatt Family entrance. Not quite, obviously. You didn't get the fireflies and all of that, but like it was a little reminiscent of that. But Harland, Harland absolutely decimated this guy, Guru Raj. And I'm really curious to see what they do with him going forward and with Gacy. It's interesting. It's different. It's unique. And I think like Harland has such a crazy look, just a unique look right now. The head shaving thing like is still a little weird. I think I would have liked him with hair, but whatever. But I do. I really enjoy what they're doing with Gacy and Harland. It's polarizing. It's not for everybody. But it's just like this. It's just creepy enough to keep me engaged, kind of like when is Gacy going to snap and like seriously become evil? And then the one of the other matches, Idris Nove versus Boa. I was a little bit disappointed with this match. I think only because of the length of time. On paper, we've only seen Idris Nove in NXT, I think once before. I think he showed up on 205 Live as well. But when Nove was in the ring against Solo Sikoa, I was like really, really impressed with what we saw out of him. You know, he gave Sikoa a hell of a match. The two of them, like, they kind of went toe to toe. He did end up taking the loss, but he looked like he belonged in the ring with a fighter like Solo Sikoa. And then with Boa, like we obviously know what Boa is capable of, even though he hasn't really been given time to show what he's been capable of in NXT, whether it be injury or whatnot. So I was kind of like, when they announced this match last week and they were kind of hyping it on social media, I was kind of looking forward to it because I thought it would be pretty bombastic. And it was in spots, but it was pretty short and there were a lot of rest holds. I don't really know where they're going with Boa. He keeps losing. They built him up, built Tian Sha up and up and up and up and up. And then Tian Sha's gone. Boa kept losing during the Tian Sha run, and now he keeps losing again. So I don't know where they go with Boa. And like I said, I was a little bit disappointed. I think with just the length of this match, maybe it was a little bit longer and they were able to get a little bit more of their stuff in, I would have been a little bit higher on it. I think that's really it that I want to mention. I guess I could talk a little about Jacket Time and GYV, but I have a feeling you'll probably do that. So I'm going to shut up and pass it over to you.
And I actually won't say anything about them because it was just a match, and they didn't even try to further whatever the heck they've got GYV trying to do right now. But with Boa, I'm just pleased that they didn't do the special effects again. You did have Vic Joseph selling it the same way, like, oh, he's going into that trance, but they didn't do the lighting and the stuff on the screens, so I'm glad they didn't go to that again. I wanted to mention Tony D'Angelo, who I thought was really good in his match against Andre Chase. There's so much character stuff with D'Angelo that it's easy to overlook how well he's doing in the ring, but he really is doing well. Andre Chase still doing his Andre Chase thing. I thought it was funny that Wade Barrett said Andre Chase founded Chase University, but it's actually already been established that the university was in fact only named after Andre Chase, which is much funnier that it's not actually his, but whoever does own it decided to name it after him. That's very funny. That was mentioned like maybe a month or two ago, but we never brought it up on here. The whole segment was telegraphed. I think like from the War Games pre-show, you could see that this sequence of events was going to come to pass, even if we couldn't predict that it was specifically going to hover around Pete Dunne's mouthpiece. But it's fine. It's a sound development in a mid-card feud. I thought it was funny that when Dunn stomped on the plastic trophy case and pieces just shattered everywhere, you could see people in the front row kind of like side-eyeing each other. Like, did that hit you? You good? That didn't like hit anybody in the eye, right? Everybody's cool. I think it's still a little odd that they diverted D'Angelo into the War Games storyline. Not that I don't think he was deserving of being in it since they went the way they did with it. Like if you were going to pick four guys from 2.0 to put in there, I think he's absolutely, in contention. But they diverted his character in such a way that it's now moved away from the natural crowd reception that he was getting, which was an anomaly in the early 2.0 days. It was like, oh, they actually liked one of them. Better change it. So that's weird, but he's doing really, really well. Already talked about Jaden Kai, but it was notable that Cora Jade was put in the crossover segment
and that there was no, and I don't think there was any mention either, but there was no Kaylee Ray, and there was no Kaylee Ray's bat that that she passed down to Cora.
Well, that's because
so
MSK pulled it out of their Mary Poppins bag.
See, and that's what I was wondering if it was supposed to be, but Kaylee's bat was green. It didn't start off as green, but it became green, and I was wondering if that was just so, like, if multiple bats ever ended up being in play, you could be certain which one was the working bat. But yeah, I did think that was probably supposed to be
her. I was just being an idiot. I don't really know if that was supposed to be hers or not.
I mean, I know I'm saying this about Matt Riddle, but why the hell else would Matt Riddle be that excited about it? Then again, he was even more excited about a traffic cone. So, Yeah,
that was a weird segment.
Every, you know what? We're there, so I'm just going to say it. Every single joke in the whole segment was, ooh, is it going to be drugs? And then it was never drugs. And it's like, it wasn't funny the first time. And every single joke was the exact same joke. Ooh, is he going to pull out drugs next? And then it wasn't. Meanwhile, you've got Matt Riddle telling them that they need to focus, even though Matt Riddle is currently working a storyline on Monday Night Raw where his character lacks focus and is losing matches because of it. The only thing that I tangentially, not even super relatedly, liked about this was Randy Orton saying, you've got to stop hanging out with jackasses on Monday Night Raw. And of course, that was in reference to the Jackass guys promoting their movie on SmackDown, minus Steve-O, and I wasn't sure why Steve-O wasn't there, but whatever. But it also they also used the word shaman, so it was like, okay, it's also kind of like subtweeting MSK and calling them jackasses, which was kind of funny. But overall, the childishness of the segment made me long for the days of Bailey wanting to play robots with Renee backstage, which was as great as Bailey is. That was not a good look for Bailey. Guru Raj, it's nice that he still exists, I think. I don't know much about him. I just know that he was in the Superstar Spectacular. I'm pretty sure he's the one that got the spot wrestling Finn Balor. And it was just like, oh, well, if they wanted to feature him in that way for the Superstar Spectacular, then there must be something there, right? And then we just haven't seen him since. But Harland... I'm not as high on this. I'm not going to go too hard on it because I didn't expect we were going to see much tonight. It was just a straight beatdown, and his demeanor is that of a damp slab of wood. So, we're not getting much here, but I also didn't expect to get much here. The one thing I did like was when Gacy went up to him and said, "Do you feel better?" And he shook his head. And that was the signal, like, okay, he's going to go back and beat up on Guru some more. And I thought that was a nice touch with the whole, like, he's got issues and Gacy is trying to help him work them out. So, like, do you feel better? Nope. Well, better go beat him up some more. I thought that was a nice touch. I know there was another Grimes versus Hudson. I think that this feud, has outstayed its welcome, a bit long in the tooth at this point. And, you're not going to get a bad match out of these two guys, but they also unceremoniously started the show with it. I've said over and over how I prefer shows starting with, this show tonight in particular should have started with Waller's promo. And even if that promo is not specifically about the match that is coming up, it still gives you time to settle in to watching the show so that then Grimes versus Hudson can feel more dramatic rather than, even though this is something that has been built to, it's just sort of like, they're just opening the show with it. And, I feel like that is, even with a match like this, throwing it out there cold. And on top of it, as part of a feud that should have already ended.
All right. And with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight, guys. We did this maybe in record time. There's still a few things we didn't hit, we didn't talk about, but the major talking points and I think the big things on the show we did hit. Tom, do you have anything else to say? Did I miss anything?
The only thing that I have remaining in my notes is that I totally forgot Lash Legend was a thing. But even though her lashing out segment tonight was absolutely useless, as have almost all of her segments so far, even though I've tried to see the silver lining around them, this one was just utterly useless. But tonight was actually a pretty significant night for Lash Legend, because she debuted on 205 Live before the taping. I think I have the timeline right on that. Tonight is the first night that I became aware of that anyway. So I'm definitely going to have to I already looked at a clip of what I think was the entire match on Twitter, but I'm definitely going to seek out the whatever else there is of it and what sort of entrance she may have done. And I'll leave it to other people for now to decide what they thought of it if they choose to seek it out. But I think for now I will just say it's what you would expect. It's not the worst thing ever, but I think it's what you would expect.
Yeah, Lash Legend. That is just one god-awful segment after one god-awful segment. I can't even find a silver lining in it. I really can't. I remember there was the one week where both you and Kelly were off, and I brought a buddy of mine, Jack Birkenstock, on the show to talk about it. And, you know, he hadn't really been – he's an older wrestling fan. He was kind of like just starting to get back into wrestling again, mostly AEW, but a little bit of NXT as well. And when he watched that segment, he was just like – he was completely blown away, but in every wrong way possible. I think you probably remember when you listen back to it. But
oh, yes. Yes. And
yeah,
he's got
the
old school references as well that were fun.
Yeah, and like it's like – I feel like he hit the nail on the head with a lot of what he said. It was just – it's just such a fake show. Everything about it is just fake. There's no authenticity to it whatsoever.
You know what? I am going to ask you, I think I like our approach tonight, and I pulling back the curtain, I was even the one that suggested it, and I like how it's panned out. But of course, I'm also the one who's now looking at my notes like, oh no, we missed this too, which is fine. But I do want to ask, if we had approached this traditionally, I don't think I would have been as bold as to suggest that this is what they were trying to convey. But I am very curious if you did feel the same thing, that in the Briggs and Jensen going to party with Casey and Caden segment, were they trying to make it seem like Casey and Caden are together romantically, and that's why Briggs and Jensen didn't have a chance with them?
Ooh, you know, I'd need to rewatch that. I don't know. I didn't look at it through that lens. I didn't personally see that, but
it was all in the looks on Briggs and Jensen's faces, where they were part flabbergasted by the fact that their who they presumed were their dates for the night were no longer grooving with them. And it seemed like they were also in part kind of like, well, this sucks for us, but also awesome, bro, because chicks doing it together. That's kind of what it seemed like they were conveying, perhaps accidentally. I wondered if they were going to circle back to it and show us the story throughout the night. I'm not even entirely against the segment. I thought it was fine characterization, like a nice little character piece for the both of them, but then they ended on that shot and I was like, wait, what was I supposed to take from that?
Yeah,
it couldn't be that, possibly, could it? But it could. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely guess it could. Like, the way I took it, and I was kind of like trying to write at the same time, but the way I took it was just like the two friends kind of just like took off on their own and started having fun. But
yeah, because Briggs and Jensen didn't have any rhythm anyway.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, yeah, there might be those connotations there too. Like, I wouldn't be. It's funny because there's part of me that says, you know, it's 2021. Like, I wouldn't put it past WWE to come out with some sort of a lesbian couple or a gay couple and actually treat them not like Billy and Chuck. But at the same time, this is WWE. I also can't see them doing that. So, I don't know.
Remember how Billy and Chuck was perceived as so progressive at the time?
Oh, my God. I do. I do remember that. Now,
granted, I remember news puff pieces about it. Like, look at this wonderful thing that WWE is doing.
Well, like, so back then, I think I was aware of the dirt sheets. Like, I knew that the Torch existed. Yeah, I knew the Wrestling Observer existed, but, like, I didn't go out of my way to, like, look for them or anything. I remember seeing an old Torch newsletter at a library. I think that was kind of how I got introduced to the Torch, if memory serves. But regardless, I remember that actually breaking into mainstream media. And I remember walking into the living room at the house that my parents and I were living at the time, and it coming on the news and like them talking about it on the news. And like, I remember my dad being disgusted by it. He wouldn't be disgusted by it now, but my dad is a little old school. I remember him being and like, you know, giving me a rash of crap about watching wrestling, which he always used to do. But yeah, it's crazy how times have changed since Billy and Chuck were a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, if that was intentionally conveyed as opposed to accidentally, then fine. That can totally be, like you said, 2021 and all, you know, that can totally be just an element of their team. That's perfectly fine. The issue, I think, is if, and I don't think we're at risk of this because they just recharacterized them as, quote, the life of the party. But, you know, the issue would be if their characters become their sexuality, and that's, you know, and that's
yeah.
what their characters are. That would be the issue on top of, you know, what I drew from Briggs and Jensen's agape jaws. And like the next thing we see is Casey and Caden partying backstage, and Trick and Mello are like, oh yeah, you hear about them? I want to subscribe to that channel. And it's just like, oh, gross. So you can realistically visualize these things happening. I don't think we can expect them at this point, but there was a little bit of like, kind of feels like a Chasing Amy thing here, guys. Maybe you wanted to reshoot that take, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And with Bruce Pritchard kind of more at the helm now. Yeah, it makes sense. Anyway, with all of that now said and out of the way, guys, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up for tonight on WWE.com, PWTorch.com. That was weird. PWTorch.com. And if you are into role-playing games and a way to use them as a form of therapy, check out what I do over at YouTube at DegeTime. It's DegeTime. We're on a little bit of a hiatus right now through the holidays and, you know, to let me move so I don't have to take care of editing a whole bunch of videos while I'm trying to move my life into a new house. But check us out if you're interested in RPGs and ways to use them therapeutically. Tom, who are you?
And all of my links are at Tom Staup on Twitter, including the link to the Willing Creatures podcast, the RSS feed. There are also direct links to Apple and Google and Spotify. The most recent episode is 3 hours and 20 minutes of me and my character, who has been overtaken by an evil magical book. Her priorities were totally changed when I attuned to this grimoire, and the most recent episode sees me questing over an ambitious 10-year period to build a fortress and raise an undead army, so you can find out whether I succeeded in that or not. And at this point, we've actually already recorded the follow-up to it, and oh my goodness, the drama is high right now. So good stuff on the Willing Creatures D&D Actual Play podcast.
All right, guys, with that, hopefully Kelly will be back next week. It seems that he might still be opening up those cards with his brother. I wonder what autographed WWE cards he may have gotten tonight. I have no idea what he's doing tonight. He's just not here, guys. Maybe he'll be back next week.
You're really trying to pop me.
Maybe. I was actually thinking about opening the show tonight by saying that Kelly got so much money for both of those Robert Stone autographed cards that he's gotten that he big leagued us and he's not doing the show tonight. But I kind of forgot about that by the time we opened the show. So, you know,
or
I figure
Big League Chew.
Ooh, Big League Chew. That's good. Some good bubble gum. good bubble gum right there. Wow, that's not where I figured we'd end the show tonight. So you know what, guys? I'm going to end the show there. Big League Chew.